This is Robin Bell, Director of Instrumental Studies at the State College of Florida, and this is the Suncoast Culture Club podcast. Welcome to the club. The Suncoast Culture Club podcast is your weekly dose of what's happening in the performing and visual arts on Florida's Suncoast, including interviews, reviews, discussions, behind-the-scene tidbits, and insider trading. Join State College of Florida arts faculty as they bring you all of the arts happenings on the Suncoast, from music to dance to art to theater. Come along and join the club. I have with me today the SCF percussion instructor, Tomasz Kowalczyk, who is also the acting principal percussionist with the Sarasota Orchestra and has taken on an additional duty here at the State College of Florida this semester in conducting our SCF percussion ensemble for the first ever Beat Hunger concert. Get it? Beat Hunger? Which will be Tuesday, November 16th at 7:30 p.m. in the SCF Neal Performing Arts Center. There are no tickets to this event. Admission is totally free, but patrons should bring two canned goods to donate to the SCF food pantry, as the point of this concert, my friends, is to beat hunger. An added bonus for folks that attend this performance, not only will they hear the SCF Percussion Ensemble, but we have three special guests joining us: the Bradenton Christian School Percussion Ensemble and Drumline, the Buffalo Creek Middle School Percussion Ensemble, and the Venice High School Drumline. That is going to make this inaugural Beat Hunger concert so special for the entire community. So Tomasz, welcome back to the club.
It's good to be back. So you probably told me this before, but I actually didn't know that there's going to be other ensembles there.
Yeah.
So that's a first.
It's all coming together kind of quickly as I continue to reach out and they're filtering in. And
right.
Yeah. So
okay.
We're going
to know.
Yeah. And one of the things I'm going to talk to you about today is sort of the coordination of all the equipment for percussion, because that's kind of one of the gnarly things about it. Now, Tomasz, I say welcome back to the club because when we hired you here at SCF to be our new percussion instructor, we did an entire podcast interview with you that is in season one, episode 36.
Okay.
So if people want to know all about your background, your experience, and your favorite places to eat here on the Suncoast, they can
check out that episode. Didn't we talk about pierogies too?
Oh, yes.
A pierogi.
I know. You promised pierogi, to make me some, but I haven't. I had that invitation yet, maybe next weekend. Anyway, Tomasz, today I want to talk to you about your experience this year teaching our applied private percussion lessons and putting together this percussion ensemble program for the Beat Hunger concert. So first, let me say that with the opening of the new studio for the performing arts, which is the new addition to our SCF music building, that includes our new recital hall, we also got a new percussion studio. And for me, that was the impetus to plan a concert of just percussion music. I approached you with the idea and you jumped on it, much to my excitement. So it wasn't until several months later that you told me, although you had previously played in many percussion ensembles, you had never actually conducted one. So tell us, what has that experience been like for you this semester?
It's actually been great. So I was really worried about doing it because I'd never done it before. And as with everything, you know, you're not sure. I remember I was asking my friends about like repertoire and things like that. And also, I didn't know the students, you know.
Yes, really hard to pick the right music when you don't know how well they do or don't play.
I never heard them play and they didn't do any auditions or anything like that, you know. So I was just kind of like, all right, let me just pick something at random. So I decided like, okay, well, I'm going to try to find the stuff that's going to be not too hard to put together, but still have some musical quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I basically went through our little library of percussion music that you cataloged over the summer.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
No charge.
All right. Good. We're doing it for a charity, right? We're doing it to beat hunger. So
yes.
Just add to that, you know, is it at least two canned goods, right?
Yeah. I mean, people could bring 20.
Yeah, or 100. I mean, however, like,
yes,
yeah.
There's actually a competition here at the school for which department can raise the most canned foods for our food pantry. And so I'm hoping through this concert that we end up winning that competition. I don't know what we get, but
Well, I don't think we get anything from it. I think we just get a satisfaction from it.
No, I think there's some, if, whatever the department. Well, we're going to find out because I'm going to interview Michelle Pools after you. She's the lady in charge of the food pantry here at State College of Florida. She's going to tell us all about it.
I don't know her. Yeah.
Yeah. Not yet. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, so I found some, you know, I went to the process of elimination, you know, picked out like out of the whole, like picked like 20 pieces. Then I kind of like an audition. I went from 100 items out of the many in the catalog to like 20, then 10, then I was like five, you know. And of course, what's so great now is that, you know, even though I didn't know those pieces, it's like, yeah, I just go on my iPhone and go on YouTube and found.
Oh, it's all there.
It's all there, you know. Yeah. So it wasn't really like, you know, I was worried. I don't know why I got this in my head. Like, oh, am I going to get this wrong? You know?
Yeah.
But
well, I mean, that's a huge issue. I have that fear with the band and the orchestra here because you pick a program and what if they just literally can't play it? Or what if it's so easy you have 6 weeks to rehearse it and you're ready in week two?
Right.
Then what do you do? That kind of thing.
I was also worried about like timing, about how long the, the program's going to be. But I didn't know that there's going to be other performers too at the concert.
Yeah, I think it's going to be about a 3.5 hour concert. No.
Wow.
Bring your lunch. No, it won't be that long.
Well, there'll be food there, so.
A lot of food in the lobby.
Yeah, so, I mean.
Bring a can opener.
It could be a marathon. We could do it all night. We have food. We have water. There's bathrooms. I mean, what else?
What more could you want?
Maybe some beds.
No, yeah. No. Well, we're not going to put anybody to sleep with this concert. Mm-mm. No way. Well, in addition to the percussion ensemble itself playing, I asked you to play a marimba solo.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. And then we have two students that are taking lessons with you that are music majors. They have both played on recital hour, and I asked them to also play solos. And so my concept is that we have a visiting group, one of our soloists. A visiting group, one of our soloists, a visiting group, one of our soloists, and then the percussion ensemble from SCF ends the concert. That's kind of how I see it planned out.
All right. Well, we'll talk about it separately, just like figure out then exactly the timing and what pieces.
Yeah, because with the other groups that are playing, they, you know, like drum lines are coming, they're just playing cadences, and they don't know how long it's going to be. Really, I don't.
So they don't have the timings.
No, huh. And we don't worry about it. To me, that's one of the best things about music, is that music is art through time, right? The clock has to be ticking. The world has to be spinning for music to happen.
Right.
It's art. Like painting is art on a canvas. Architecture is art in space. Music is art in time. But when you're playing music, you have no idea how much time has elapsed. It could have been 5 minutes or 55 minutes. You just don't know.
We've all been there.
Yeah. When you're playing music, time stands still. But music is art and time. I always find that I have a tough time wrapping my head around that concept sometimes. So my point is, when people go, how long is this going to be, the timing? I'm telling you, I never think about it. I never worry about it.
Well, it's a 7:30 concert.
Yeah. We'll be done by 9 for certain.
Yeah. We don't want to be there past 9 or 10. I mean, like, no, no. 9 is, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the restaurants close at 9:30. We got to be done at 9. Okay. Tell me how many students are in the percussion ensemble.
We've got 5 students.
And that was a question too, right? When I asked you to do this, you said, how many? I said, well, I don't really know.
Well, nope. And then I was like, well, then I don't know what we're going to play, because how am I supposed to plan this without this information?
It's one of the unique challenges of the community college system, because I thought for certain we were going to have 4, and then we show up for band the first day and 2 more have added the class. You're like, oh, we're up to 6. So I think you've done a really good job. Once we said we definitely have 5, then you were able to better pick the literature that we're going to play. Right.
And even, you know, it wasn't like it was all quintets. I just, you know, there's 1 quintet, there's 1 quartet, there's 2 quartets.
And someone can just double a part. When there's a quartet, you have 5 people. 2 people can just play the same part, right?
I'm not even. No, like one person can just not play one piece. It's fine.
Oh, they just sit there.
That's something that actually brings me back to my undergrad when I was studying with Bob Van Slice, because his, I don't know if we talked about it in the last podcast, I remember everything, but the kind of what he called the centerpiece, the cornerstone of his program was chamber music, right?
Right.
And the way it would work, it was different. It was different than what you normally consider percussion ensemble. It was, we called it, you know, it was chamber music, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
There's percussion ensemble has a certain connotation that, to me at least, that's, I don't know, but chamber music was different. And yeah, so it would happen like there would be a group being coached by Bob, but everybody else in the studio would be in there, you know?
Yes, you're learning by observing.
And then you had to pay attention every now and then, you know, Bob would like turn around and be like, look at you, like, what did you think? What did you hear?
Yeah.
Did you think that now was better, or do you like the other one better?
You're actively listening. And the other thing I think is a bonus is, I mean, we have to plan a little bit for absenteeism because not everybody is able to come to every single rehearsal. They do get sick. They do have car problems. And so if you have a quartet and you have five people and one's not there, then that fifth person can possibly cover a part.
Yeah, that actually happened. One of the rehearsals, somebody wasn't there. And I just started thinking, Gannon, just come in and sight read this part. Because, you know, you also have to know how to sight read. So there's that. Right. And then it was like one time when I think we did the quintet, but Jarek or somebody wasn't there. So I just jumped in and played.
Right,
because like, why not?
Yeah, and it's interesting. Of the five students you have, two are music majors.
Right.
And the other three just like playing percussion, and they're in the band. And we should probably talk about how the rehearsal schedule happened, because really it's what I call a pullout situation. Here at the State College of Florida, we have symphonic band class on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 2 to 3:20. And so, Tomas, you and I looked at our schedules, and I said, what if every Tuesday during band, they were with you, and then every Thursday, they were with me rehearsing the band music. And so they kind of liked that schedule. They were getting a little bit more, you know, individual attention with the percussion teacher and doing something cool. That worked out for you?
I think that worked out for me because normally at the orchestra on Tuesdays, we normally only have one rehearsal. There was a few days when I couldn't make it on the Tuesday.
Yeah, we would just shift to a Thursday.
Thursday, or we had Ye come in to coach a couple times recently, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of me, which was great. I mean, I think they liked her too. So
yeah, and it was good for the student schedule because we weren't scheduling yet another hour class for them, and they didn't. You know, you can't really sign up for extra courses with your credit hours and stuff, and so it was a class within a class. Yeah.
Because, see, the whole community college thing for me, I'm not quite understanding how it works because I went to a conservatory.
Right.
So it was, you know, it was...
You take everything you want.
Paid a tuition, you had a scholarship or whatever, and you had a minimum amount of credits you had to take. But you could also take as many credits as you wanted, I think. I don't think there was a limit.
Probably not.
No.
But here it's very...
You pay per hour.
Yeah. You pay per hour, and we're only allowed to offer so many classes, and they all count as electives in the AA degree. So we just have to be cognizant of that with the students and their number of credit hours. But I think we've handled it well. I do this often. In the spring semester, I do a whole chamber music concert where the band really divides up into every chamber music group you can think of, including percussion ensemble. And then we do a concert of just the little chamber music groups. And it works out good.
Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, like, what I think about now, the community college system kind of makes more sense.
So one of the things, Tomas, that I've always loved about percussion is the variety of the instruments. And as you were saying, if you have five players and maybe one or two are just really good and two are pretty good and then one's like just okay. But the great thing about percussion ensemble is there's a place for anybody, whether you're playing a really hard marimba part or a really hard timpani part or the triangle part, which is important but maybe doesn't need the technical skill. So talk to us in the pieces that the percussion ensemble is going to be playing. Tell us the many different instruments that are going to be performed.
Right. So I think one of the things we're going to play is a fun little arrangement of the Pizzicato Polka by Johann Strauss. Yeah. Fun little piece. It's for four players. I think we're doing it on two marimbas. That was like the first thing I think I picked because I was like, well, it's pretty easy.
It's all simple. Keyboard mallet
stuff. It was all keyboard mallets. Mm-hmm. Everybody, two mallets, two people on one marimba. You know, high, low. We started working on it. And, you know, first it was, you know, making sure that like, everybody knows their notes and that how many sharps and flats there are. You know, of course, there was that. But once we got past that, we actually could work on things such as, you know, flexibility, moving together, moving forward, moving backwards, breathing together. How to have four people line up a beat exactly together.
Yeah.
You know, how do you do that? You do it through chamber music. You're doing it through playing with other people. You know, you can't That's something you can't practice alone.
That's right.
But it's the same skill that you use to play, whether it's a duet or you're playing with a 100-piece orchestra. The skill is the same.
It's just a great point.
It's the same skill. So yeah.
And is that something they're going to be able to start and stop on their own, or are you conducting that?
I don't conduct anything.
Oh, good. They're doing everything on their own. Nice. Then what else are we playing, and what instruments are we playing on?
So then there's two pieces by a composer percussionist named Warren Benson.
You might not know this. Warren Benson retired to Bradenton. He lived here. Yep.
So you probably know more about him than I do.
No, I just know that he lived here. And yeah. I know that he went to church somewhere because he was like involved in the music program at this church in downtown Bradenton.
Okay. When I was just looking at the catalog and I listened to them, they struck me as they seem pretty easy to put together.
Mm-hmm.
Small setups too, which is, you know, I mean, we have a lot of instruments here. We have good instrument collection. So, and especially with the limited time that we have, only the 1 hour and a half of rehearsal a week, you know, I didn't want to have pieces that are going to take like 30 minutes to set up and then rehearse for 30 minutes and break it down.
Right. Yeah. That is part of a percussion ensemble rehearsal that other ensembles don't have to deal with, the whole set up and tear down thing.
Yeah. So of course I know that from my own experience. So those pieces by Warren Benson, there is one called Trio, which is a trio. And there's, I think three movements for a quartet. Which are three movements for a quartet. And those are great, actually. I'd never heard them before until I started researching them. And they're cool. They're well written. They have some challenges as far as ensemble, the cool challenges ensemble-wise, how to put things together. There are some logistical challenges, which we also have to think about as percussionists. Like, you know, these guys just, you know, they just didn't know. Like, how do you make your setup so it works?
Right. Because you can get those instruments and have your own little pod if you have to play multiple instruments and
But you know, but there's multiple ways to do it, but there are also better ways to do it and worse ways to do it. So I just kind of show them like what I think is the better way to do it. You know, and things such as like how to like switch your mallets when you play, like have a tray with a towel. What side of your setup is the tray going to be on so that you can reach for the mallet that you need without bumping into another instrument.
And even just the decision-making process of which mallet to use in this particular instance for the right sound that you want out of your instrument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those pieces are great because they pose a lot of those challenges. I think they're musically rewarding. And I think that's...
Do they involve keyboard, mallet, percussion, and you know what we would call battery, snare drum, bass drum?
No, those are actually all small. Not all small, but they're all like actually orchestral instruments. I mean, tom-toms, snare drums, triangles, cymbals, bass drum, gong, you know, things like that, tambourine. Yeah, it's actually, there's no keyboards in that.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. And what I love about the percussion is with so many different instruments to deal with, you know, you are learning how to do that, making all these differences a different way with every instrument and every mallet and every stick and every beater. You know, it's really like it engages all parts of the brain. To me, I mean, I really wanted to be, like, I joined percussion class in seventh grade and the band director told me that girls couldn't be drummers. And so I got stuck on trumpet. I know. But my mom was a drummer. She was a stage drummer.
No way.
Yeah. She played
like drum set
drum set for a big band. She got a full scholarship, Texas Woman's University. She played in the Serenaders.
Badass.
Yeah. She did a USO tour with Bob Hope. And
are there like recordings of her on YouTube or something?
There are recordings. Yeah, actually.
Well, send me some. Why don't I check it out?
Yeah. That's why I wanted to play drums, but it didn't work out for me. But I've always felt at heart I'm a percussionist, not a drummer. I'm a percussionist.
Everybody's a percussionist. Yeah. Everybody's a drummer.
Like when I open up a brand new score, that's the first line I look at, and I take the time to make part assignments. And I'm kind of careful and thoughtful of, you know, I think a lot of band directors just say, okay, here's the music, you guys take care of it. But I think it's just such an important part of the ensemble. Right. And when you can do a pullout like we're doing, and they get that extra attention, and now they're going to have their own concert. I mean, this is like the pinnacle for me. I'm so thrilled about this.
I think that, you know, we don't exactly know what happened at the beginning of humanity. You know, there's however many explanations of it, but I can imagine that it is likely that before we spoke or we sang or we played any kind of instrument, we probably just like
beat on things.
Well, beat on each other, probably. Yeah. Beat on things. Or, you know, I mean, like, actually, even you know, even monkeys do that, right? I mean, yeah. they
beat on their chest.
Mm-hmm. So, and you know, and little, like when babies are born,
yeah,
they beat around.
And they have rattles. We give them rattles.
We give them rattles. I have my niece, she's 2 years old, and my sister recently sent me a video. They were to some friend's house where they had a drum set, and my little niece, like, she had a stick and she was just banging on a drum, and it was like perfect because that's a natural thing, right?
And she just held it and beat in perfect time.
Perfect time, mm-hmm. Perfect sound.
So Tomasz, tell me, because I asked you to perform a solo for the crowd and the students that are going to be here. What piece have you picked to play for us on this concert?
So I'm going to play a piece by an Argentinian composer named Alejandro Vignal.
Cool.
The piece is called Con Variations. It's a theme with a set of 8 or 9 variations in total. And I'm just doing kind of like a suite of it. The theme is based on like Pakistani traditional singing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the exact name, but there was a guy who was like, whatever, his name was Khan.
Like Genghis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like Genghis Khan. And this theme that he sings is like melismatic, you know, it's cool. Like I can't do it. I don't know how to sing that. I'm a horrible singer. But so it's very short theme. But then it's, you know, this composer Vignal, he just does these really cool things with rhythm. It has these kind of multiple pulses going on at the same time.
Oh, cool.
But it's all within like grid. It all fits in on a 16-note grid. You could actually have a computer, a MIDI, play it.
Wow.
But it sounds sometimes like, yeah, there's like things moving in two different speeds.
And this will be on the marimba.
On the marimba, 5-octave marimba.
Five-octave marimba, very, very nice. Now, we have a couple of drum lines that are going to play at this concert.
Yeah.
That's probably an experience you've never had, being from Poland, never been in a marching band, done the whole drumline thing.
Nope.
Have you ever thought, man, I really missed out not having that experience?
I appreciate it. I think a really great drumline.
Yes.
Like really these really good DCI groups. They're awesome.
They are awesome, yeah.
They're awesome. I think I missed out on that.
So you just met these 5 students for the first time at the beginning of this semester. Correct. And here on November 16th, they are going to give a concert under your tutelage. So talk to us, Tomasz, about the growth you have seen in these students, both as individual percussionists and as an ensemble and in a group.
It's been actually fantastic. Both of my majors and the other guys in the percussion ensemble and non-majors, they've been just so great. Like some of them like reached out to me like in the middle of the summer, like, hey, what do I need to prepare?
Yeah.
Jarek did that. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they were kind of a hodgepodge group when we first sent them to you, and now they are a very cohesive unit. And I hear it ensemble, our symphonic band rehearsals as well, but then I see it like they're working together on their setup for each song that we do and moving of equipment from place to place and the sharing of things. And here, I do this. And like I've seen them become this little quintet of this most perfect percussion section that I think I've ever had in my career. I'm so happy with them and your work with
them.
That's
great. Wow. Yeah. That's not me.
No, I'm telling you, it's a big part of it. I know it. You don't convince me otherwise.
But it's all them. I mean, they're all doing it. I'm not doing it. I mean, I'm doing a little bit.
Well, I am so excited to welcome our 3 guests with us on the concert, the Bradenton Christian School, Buffalo Creek Middle School, and Venice High School, which I should add that one of our percussion students here at SCF, music major Jarek Vaught, who we've talked about several times today, is the drumline instructor for at Venice High School. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's going to be really special for his students to not only perform on this concert, but watch him perform a solo on the marimba and also in our percussion ensemble. Just really neat. And I can't wait to hear what you have done with our percussion ensemble this semester. The student musicians are so excited about putting this program together and sharing it with the world. This concert, Beat Hunger, a percussion ensemble concert, will be held on Tuesday, November 16th at 7:30 p.m. in the SCF Neal Performing Arts Center. No tickets are needed. It is a free event. We just ask that you bring 2 canned goods with you for the SCF food pantry just in time for Thanksgiving. Tomasz, I want to thank you for joining me today to talk about this awesome concert and for all your work with our percussion students this year.
Great. I just want to add one more thing. We should give a special shout out to Ye Young Yoon because she graciously came in to sub for me on 2 percussion ensemble rehearsals this week and the week before that, right?
Yes.
So
very grateful for her for that.
Thank you, Ye, for doing that. I think, you know, She's a great player. She's a great person.
And she's in here practicing all the time.
She works hard, I tell you.
Yeah,
you
know, love
she's,
that.
She's a hard worker. And she's, you know, she's the example of the girl drummer.
There you go, girl
Get
drummer.
Done.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, let's do it.
And when we come back, I'm going to visit with Michelle Pulls, who's the Assistant Director of Athletics and Student Activities. The SCF Food Pantry was her brainchild, and I'm going to talk to her about how the pantry came to be, where it is housed, and how it benefits our students at the State College of Florida. Back after this break. The Suncoast Culture Club podcast is proudly sponsored by the State College of Florida Foundation, dedicated to providing lifelong education to artists, actors, musicians, and dancers in the Suncoast region. Welcome back from the break and help me welcome to the Suncoast Culture Club, the State College of Florida's Assistant Director of Athletics and Student Activities, Michelle Pulls. Michelle, welcome to the club.
Happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Now, Michelle, you ain't from around here, are you?
No, ma'am.
All right. Tell us your background, how you got into college student activities and athletic directing, and what brought you here to the Suncoast to work at the State College of Florida?
Yeah, sure. I'm a born and raised military kid, bounced around, always had an athletic background, got into athletics because of a passion of sport. I got my opportunity to go through college because of an athletic scholarship, and it also paid for my master's degree when I was coaching at another institution.
Just like our music students.
So athletics was my passion.
And what's your sport?
Softball.
Okay, softball. Yeah.
I had an awesome head coach when I was going through the University of Maine who really brought in cultural aspects for where we were traveling because we had a lot of students that didn't get out much. And I really appreciated that, what she did. So when I was able to transition into student life and student affairs, it kind of blossomed into that. So
yeah, because were you kind of like in the whole athletic thing and you said, hey, there is a whole side of the college where I could earn a living and still do what I want to do and have a retirement plan and all that?
I was. When I was looking at my master's program, I was looking at recreational sports, student affairs, management, leadership, and then I ended up in sports administration, sports management, because there's just a lot of crossover. But I really like the connections that you have with the students outside of the athletic realm because you really make an impact in them. So instead of just having my athletes, having students who I see every day on their academic journey, knowing I'm making an impact is more meaningful to me.
And you said you were a military brat, I guess. Yeah. So how many different places did you live growing up?
Four. So my dad was actually in missiles, so we didn't travel that much. But first time we moved, I went to West Germany. So I'm dating myself back in the day. It was very traumatizing for a young student to travel halfway across the world into an area that you couldn't speak their language. But it was an awesome experience. I reflect on it now.
Did you end up learning German while you were there?
Yes and no. I've lost a lot of it just because I don't speak it. But it was one of those things that I'm a huge history buff. So being right there in walking through history with all the World War II that they had there was awesome.
Yeah. So West Germany, where else?
Montana and North Dakota. And then my dad retired and we went back to where my mom was from, Bangor, Maine.
Bangor, Maine. Yep. Yes, very nice. And that's why you went to the University of Maine.
Yep.
And did you find it hard being an athlete moving from Montana and all these places? Or kind of did you hit a stride once he retired and you were high school age?
It was very difficult for me because in the armed forces, it's co-ed. So when my dad retired, it wasn't co-ed. So I was used to playing baseball. I was used to playing co-ed basketball. I was used to playing co-ed soccer. So when my dad retired and I had to go try out for the softball team, I didn't know what softball was. I thought it was slow pitch. Wasn't interested in slow pitch. I was disappointed that I couldn't play baseball. Then I found out what fast pitch was. I've actually played more baseball than softball.
That's fascinating. Wow. And what position do you play?
Shortstop.
Okay. Good. Good.
Of course.
And you were at high school in Maine on the softball team, get a scholarship to the University of Maine.
Yep.
And so what is your first degree in?
Natural Resources Land Use Management. I'm a tree hugger.
Well, in Maine, that's a good degree,
it's a
right?
Very good degree, yeah. It was about to help people who are using their land or farming their tree stands, how they can use the land in a most economical and affordable way that has the least amount of impact on the environment.
Doesn't really set you up for student activities at a college. Okay, so did you have to further your education?
I did, but I had an opportunity to come back and coach at Maine.
My
head coach retired 1 year after my graduation from the University of Maine, and I loved it. And then I ended up coaching there for 5 years.
That's how you got into the student activity side of things?
Yep. Just kind of paid attention to what was happening and just connected to making sure our students had good life skills and started building the program the way I thought it should be built. And my head coach allowed me to that freedom to do that. And then I got the opportunity to be the interim head coach for 1 year.
Wow.
And then had that opportunity. And then I was able to move to Indiana University in the Big Ten and had more resources, more opportunities. And they have a leadership.
Resources meaning money.
Resources meaning money. But they also have a leadership development course where they put their student athletes through. Every freshman, sophomore that's marked by the coaching staff gets to go through this leadership development to raise students to potential captains. And I was picked actually to be an instructor in that area. So that really kind of like fed the idea that I can be a student lifer or student advisor in that aspect. So
okay.
Yeah.
And so you were in Indiana.
Yep.
And you have, how long have you been now at the State College of Florida?
I've been here for 7 complete years. So
came halfway through the year?
Yeah, I started in September.
What a difference a Big Ten, University of Indiana, to a community college, State College of Florida. What do you see as the biggest difference in our student activities and student life area?
We have to beg for students to attend. You know, I think when you have a residential campus, you have that common area that they don't have anything happening from 8 to 10 o'clock. All of our students are either working, they have children, they have other circumstances that's pulling them away.
And then when you say students to attend, you don't mean school, you mean club activities. Yep. Yeah, that's really hard.
Great retention here, great enrollment, but you know, students are truly paying for their classes, and I think they understand their structure of their lives, and they know they have 2 hours, and that 2 hours is for class. It's not for the extracurricular and co-curricular activities.
Yeah, and very similar. You know, I was at the University of Tennessee, yep. Big school, same thing on campus housing. You did intramural sports. You were in this and that. Of course, being in the music program, that kind of took up a lot of our time, but you had to be really creative here at the community college level on how you get students involved. So what are some things that you've done to increase that?
Just really making sure that we listen to what the students want. You know, any student can come into our office and create a club as long as they have a faculty or an employee that's willing to be their advisor, making sure we're paying attention to their needs and wants and supporting them, allowing them to have the flexibility to have access to the spaces that we have here. For example, someone can rent out the student's performing arts center for a movie. As long as it's not being used by the music or theater program, it's not going to cost them anything because they're affiliated with a club.
Right.
You know, and giving them those resources, access to those resources is important.
And how many clubs do we have here?
We have 35 total. We have 12 on the Venice, 24 on the Bradenton campus, and we have our eSports, which is on both campuses.
Oh, eSports. How's that going?
It's actually going pretty well. Yeah. We unfortunately purchased our computers right into the pandemic. We've been virtual for a year and a half. We've had some good numbers. We're starting to gain ground and having students come in. We're not opening our space yet because the Venice space isn't open yet, and we want to make sure it's equal access to both student populations.
And what are some of the most active clubs that we have on campus? I mean, besides the music club, of course.
Yeah, the music club's awesome. We have the Nerd Culture Club is really active on the Bradenton campus. It's a little bit of everything. They do gaming, anime, you know, old school board games, Smash Brothers.
Cool.
And we have the Earth Club, which is awesome. They go out to
beach cleanups
and kayaking trips. And then down on the Venice campus, we have Swamp Scribes. They do open mic nights. And then we have our traditional, like our PBL, PTK. PTK is our honors program. PBL is a business honors program.
Leaders, yeah. Yep. Yeah. So. Yeah. Because some of your clubs are just students, and then some, like the music club, we are academic and,
correct,
you know, yep, student activities. And one of the things that I'm talking to you today about is that the music club and the music program is putting on a concert on Tuesday, November 16th called Beat Hunger. It is a percussion ensemble concert at 7:30 p.m. in the SCF Neal Performing Arts Center. And we are not selling tickets to this. Rather, we are asking everyone to bring at least 2 canned goods for our mission to help the SCF Food Pantry, which is a part of your initiatives as the Assistant Director of Student Activity. So tell us a little bit about the food pantry and how this idea came about.
Yeah, actually, Susan Walters, who is our student coordinator of student services, she was in the Office of Student Life as a Title IX educator.
I call her COVID queen.
Yes, she's the COVID queen. But when we hired her, she was in our area, and we were getting ready to do a food drive for the Manatee Food Bank. And we just kind of looked at each other and it's just like, we have so many students that are food insecure here. Why don't we just do a food drive and keep it here? And then it was, why not? Like, what's going to stop us? So that was back in 2017, right up into November. And so we just decided to do a holiday food drive. And it happened to be the 60th anniversary of SCF. And so the departments really rallied around the whole donate 60 cans of this, 60 cans of that. And we had a storage space that public safety was so gracious to say, let's clean this out. Let's make it work.
Nice.
And all of a sudden we had a food bank. So,
do you have more than food in there? Do you do paper towels, toilet paper, so, yep, personal items?
Hygiene items and food items. We don't do any perishable items. We did have an awesome employee for SCF who was giving us free range chicken eggs, but her chickens have kind of rotated out. So they're not laying eggs right now. So, which has been awesome. And the students who took advantage of it was great. We know the only thing we asked is to recycle the egg crates back, and it was really nice. So, and Dr. P actually donated the fridge for us so that we had that, but we're trying not to have perishable foods. So that was a limited thing, because that's one of the tougher things that we need to make sure that we don't want to give anybody that's going to be spoiled. So.
Right. That is hard. And the space, because I remember when I heard we were going to start a food pantry here, a food bank at State College of Florida, that was my first thought. Where in the world are we going to house this? So you said that public safety had a storage room?
Yep. So it used to be the old faculty dining room.
Yes.
And what they did is they cut that in half, and half of it was an office for student life and half of it was for student life storage. And what we did is we just went through a complete clean, found out what we needed, what we didn't need, repurposed a lot of stuff. IT got some of our stuff. A couple of the art departments got some of our things, and we just reclassified what we needed. So now the whole room is basically our food pantry. We've been able to manage it in a very easy way.
And if I walked in, there's shelves, it's all organized.
Shelves are organized and labeled, and we have an iPad that we use for signing in. So it's completely anonymous. As soon as you hit submit, it disappears. Wow. We use that for tracking purposes for us. Our goal is to be able to get a grant down the future. Grants are kind of hard because they're so specific, but we want to make sure we have our data. It's actually come into play. We had someone, a generous donor last year, actually May of 2020, while we were in lockdown, wanted to give us a donation through the foundation, and we were able to get a $5,000 donation for the food pantry.
Wow.
Yeah.
And use that money just to go shopping.
Use that money to go shopping. The only constraint was that it had to stay in Manatee County. So what we did is we came up a way with identifying the products that we purchased. They didn't care if it was a Sarasota kid who took it, as long as it was from the Manatee food pantry. So we also have food pantries on the Liquid Ranch campus and the Venice campus that all three campuses feed each other. We just made sure that those items stayed within the Manatee County one.
And how many students does the food pantry at SCF serve?
It fluctuates. Last year we served 144 students, but we ask how many are in their current household, which could fluctuate because a lot of students won't say that they're homeless or that they're food insecure. So one day you're staying with your friend who has two friends. Next day you're staying with a family that has five people.
Yeah.
So in total, we actually served 446 people last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, when you say year, is that a calendar year or school year?
We actually go from August to end of July, just because we try to keep it into like
a school
academic
year.
Term, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't do the budget year. We try to make it clean that way.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah.
And we know you said no perishables, which I guess, so nothing like bread or fruit, fresh fruit. But what kind of food do you need the most?
Cup fruit, fruit in a can, fruit flies out. The Go-Gurts are really good that they could be housed on a shelf. Thinking about your staples, so like your rice and your beans, your potatoes, your starches, you know, those are awesome. Canned goods, but we like pop-top cans, not cans that you need to use a can opener because a lot of our students don't have can openers.
Oh.
You know, just being aware of that. Ramen always flies off the shelves. Cereal, Pop-Tarts, oatmeal, things that a lot of people take for granted. Like when I go shopping, I see BOGOs. It's one for me, one for the food pantry, one for me, one for the food pantry, just because it makes things easy.
Could someone donate a bunch of can openers?
Yeah, we've had a few people do that in the past, and they go very quickly. It's being consistent with the pop tops just makes it easy.
Yeah, because I was thinking about some things, like I have some friends that are going to donate when they come to the concert, the Beat Hunger concert. And I should let them know that. That's something I wouldn't even think of. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, the foundation, when they did their chili cook-off, I think it was in the fall of 2019, right before the pandemic, the foundation and the president's office went out to the parish chili cook-off, and they had can openers. They donated electric can openers to us, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
How about that? Now, what are the hours of the food pantry?
So we try to have hours that are SGA works. So it's Monday, Thursday from 10 to 2. But any student at any time can come and ask public safety to unlock the food pantry. And then anybody who's in the student life office can unlock it as well.
Okay.
We've had a really good buy-in with our public safety offices on all three campuses. Mm-hmm. Any student in need will be able to come to. And the food pantry just doesn't serve our students. We also serve faculty and staff. We've extended it to our vendors. So we have 3H, which is our custodial service, and our Ally Barton, which is our public safety counterparts. We make sure that everybody who's on SCF doesn't have to deal with food insecurity.
That's fantastic. And if someone comes into the food pantry, is there kind of like a limit? You can take 10 items or you, how does that work?
So we have tote bags, the nice recyclable grocery bags. We ask them to fill that once a week. And if there's a extenuating circumstances, mm-hmm. we'll be there for them.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great way to do it. So some people may only come grab a couple of things, but maybe you could put up to 10 or 12 things in one of those bags.
Yep. Yep. And we're aware of that when we go into winter break and Thanksgiving break, we let them, we'll stock up some paper boxes. Rick over in Central Services usually keeps a bunch of the boxes for us.
It is truly a team effort, this food pantry thing.
Yeah. And that's the one thing, our food pantry outside of the grant that we got, the foundation grant, it's 100% serviced by our SDF community. We're in the middle of a food drive right now. It's ending on Friday and we hand out a really cool trophy that the department or the group that wins.
Well, hold on there, Michelle, because you sent out the information about this little competition and you said it ends on Friday the 12th. And I said, what? But, and you were very kind to extend that deadline for the music program. So I want to thank you for that because we hope to have like 8,000 cans of food and Pop-Tarts and whatever donated at our Beat Hunger concert. The SCF Percussion Ensemble, under the direction of Tomasz Kowalczyk, is excited to present its first annual, we do hope to make this an annual event, Michelle. Our first annual Beat Hunger concert. Get it? Beat Hunger? Yes, I know. It is going to be at the SCF Neo Performing Arts Center on Tuesday, November 16th at 7:30 p.m. There is no need to buy tickets for this concert because this is a canned food drive. You just show up to the Neo with two canned goods or more, please bring more, for the SCF Food Pantry and enjoy an evening of percussion ensemble and drumline music from the Bradenton Christian School, Buffalo Creek Middle School, Venice High School, and the SCF Percussion Ensemble, along with some amazing solo marimbas that are going to be interspersed throughout. It should be a very special evening, and I'm really looking forward to starting this annual event. Michelle, thank you for joining me today and for spawning the SCF Food Pantry. This initiative has made the difference in the lives of so many of our students and their families, and you're really, you and Suzanne Walters are really to be commended for the idea and implementation. So I hope our concert can overstock your shelves.
I would love to have to fight for space in my office for canned goods. That means that we're doing a good job.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Suncoast Culture Club podcast. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Instagram at Suncoast Culture Club. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. That helps a lot. But most importantly, head over to our website, suncoastcultureclub.com. While there, you can send us a message requesting we cover a certain person, organization, or event. And then you can choose the Support tab to make a donation to the State College of Florida Foundation to help support the SCF Arts Education students and programs. You can also choose the Join the Club tab to make a donation directly to the podcast. And don't forget to check out our calendar of events page through the website to see all the arts happenings in Sarasota and Bradenton. Thank you for joining our club. Stay well. This has been Robin Bell.